So welcome to the Barefoot Book Show, and I'm absolutely delighted this evening to be talking with Joel Freelander. Hi, Joel.
Hi, Tom.
So how are you doing today? How is this wonderful book that you've just written going, The Self-Publisher's Companion?
Well, thanks for having me. I'm really pleased to be on the show with you. I've been looking forward to it. A Self-Publisher's Companion is still a baby. It's new in the world. It's trying to get up and walk. And I've been getting a fantastic feedback from people in the publishing business, consultants, editors, publishers, that they feel the book will be very useful to people thinking about coming into this field. So I'm pretty happy about that.
Well, isn't it a great time to be an author?
It's never been better, Tom. Although the larger publishers seem to be having some difficulties, there has never been a better time to be a writer, an author, a content creator, or someone with a message that they want to get out to the world.
And why do you think the publishers are struggling so much? Is it like the same transition the music industry went through maybe 10 years ago?
I think there's something similar about it. But you have to realize that publishing has always been a business-to-business venture. Publishers acquired properties, and then all the books were sold to distributors, wholesalers, and booksellers. So the entire publishing business is only business to business, and publishers traditionally kept the readers at arm's length. And that was
and the authors too.
That's a different story of how authors have been treated by publishers. But just focusing on the retail for a moment, I mean, the big change to me seems to be that publishers traditionally held readers at arm's length to protect their relationship with the booksellers of bookstores.
Okay.
And because of that, perhaps publishers over the years got a little out of touch with the reading public. Because they were never the ones who were in direct contact. Now, authors knew who they were writing for, and the booksellers were the ones who had to actually sell the books. But the publishers, acting as basically brokers, because what publishers do is really license the rights to property and then turn those into products. So they're really product manufacturers. Now, there's so much engagement going on where readers want to have direct involvement with the people they buy things from. They want to know who the publisher is. They want to interact with the authors. And this whole new world of interactivity, I think, has caught the publishers a little bit by surprise. And they've been very slow to respond to it. And that goes for their move into ebooks, which they've been scared of for many years, their move into social media, onto the web, and to find the ways that they can become 21st century publishing companies. So it's been very slow on the public. It's a very old, very conservative, very tradition-bound industry. But that's one of the reasons why it's so great to be a self-publisher right now, because you can cast all that aside and take control yourself and publish exactly the way you want to.
Wow, that's an amazing insight, Joel. I've not come across that before. So it's their transition from B2B to B2C to C. And the idea is that we've got consumers who are readers, and we've got, if you like, providers, which are authors. And the authors have always wanted to have direct contact with the readers, but that's not being facilitated.
No, except for the occasional bookstore tour, speaking, giving talks at bookstores. Authors, unless they were actually part of their own market, which is common in nonfiction, for nonfiction writers, they had very little opportunity to interact with readers, whether they wanted it or not. And this, of course, over many, many years, led to the whole image of an author as somebody sitting in a room by themselves, turning out manuscripts, which they hand over to other people to process somehow and turn into a product. And in the process of doing that, the authors were disenfranchised and lost control of their own material, and also perhaps have been treated rather shabbily over the years by the publishing business, which, of course, wouldn't exist without writers.
Yeah, and that leads to that other myth, doesn't it? That you know, that the author is sitting in the garret, sending off all of these proposals off, and sending off 100 proposals, maybe getting 99 non-answers, and one we like it, but it's not quite for us, and the market's not quite ready for it at this time.
Yeah, well, we know that story pretty well. So now, I mean, with the means of production kind of falling into our hands. And the rise of the social web, where people, whether they're readers, you know, book buyers, readers, they want to have involvement. They want to have interaction. They want to, like, you know, talk to the author. They want to ask questions. They want to just interact, have some way of, like, pushing back. You know, years ago, I had a publishing company of my own. And it was a very small publisher. And we published altogether maybe a dozen books. And we used to put postcards into every book we sold. And we would invite readers, if they had something to say, to write back to us. And this was just like some kind of primitive way to set up an interaction between the publisher and the readers. And I want to tell you, Tom, we got hundreds and hundreds of those postcards back every year. Just a staggering number of people who just wanted to have some way of interacting with the person who was pushing all this content out. Now, the web has given us that, and that's just brilliant.
Yeah, I've just been reading a great book by one of the guys behind Twitter. I think he was number 9, Dom Segola, and he's written a book called 140 Characters, The Short Form. And in each chapter, if you get the iPhone app version of his book, you can actually discuss that chapter with the author, which is just phenomenal.
Oh, it's fantastic. And I think we're going to see a lot more of that. I've seen other books where there are discussion forums available to readers of the book, and it's almost like a closed forum. You have to be an owner of the book to participate in the discussion. And I think there's so much experimenting going on with these new forms and formats that it's just an incredibly creative time for book publishing, writers, and everybody connected with that business.
But we're talking about creativity, though. Your day job is as a book designer, isn't it? In fact, your website is thebookdesigner.com.
Yes, it is. I'm a creative professional.
How long have you been doing this for?
Tom, I've been in the book business for a very long time, but I actually grew up in the publishing business since my father was a printer and would take me as a child down to the print shop where the linotype operators would set my name on little pieces of lead and they'd let us play with those and then collect them before we left so we didn't get lead poisoning. And, you know, around the house we had big, enormous type catalogs, and these are the kind of things I would play with when I was young, looking through all the type samples, and so I kind of grew up in it. But I've been designing books for longer than I'd like to say, probably a long time, many books.
So would you call yourself a fontographer?
A fontographer? No, I would call myself a typographer.
Okay, I'm with you. Yeah,
typographer is somebody who designs with type. And that's one of the things I like about book design. It's in a very quiet art form, because the whole purpose of book design is to present the author's thoughts to the reader in as fluid and readable a way as possible, and for the designer to do that while calling no attention at all to himself.
So if I gave you like 500 words of text, right, then I guess you could do the sort of before and after. I'll send it you with Arial, and using heading one, heading two, and all this sort of stuff. If I've done it in a kind of nice way, nice structured way, and then the right typographer could make that really dance off the page.
We could make it stand up and sing the national anthem and serve you tea at the same time.
Now that is a real talent. That is a real talent.
And, you know, I've written about this. I've put samples of this exact situation up on my blog, where we've taken something that looks like it would have been set by one of these subsidy book publishers that charge you a lot and deliver very little. And you get kind of accidental typography. and compared that to what that same book might look like if it was actually done by a book designer. And I think the difference is astonishing and has a lot to do with how well your book communicates to readers.
And actually, one of the things that I try and teach people is also to write thinking of the reader. So especially now with the e-readers that have come out, that people don't want to read long, long chapters that go on and on and on. They need pauses. You need to be able to breathe, and you need it to be broken down into little silos. And bearing in mind people might be reading these things on a train or at night or whatever, then people have to silos of content nowadays, and things that are nicely broken up as well. And I know that's one of the things that you work on and you deliver very well, is just having that lovely structure that is implicit, I guess, in the book design.
Yeah, in book design, of course, we're constrained by the manuscript. That's the raw material, that and the fonts and the you know, the restrictions that are put on it by the printer or the ebook, whatever it's going to be. And I dealt with this in putting together my own book, because I was basically taking a lot of blog posts, which don't look like what you see in books very often, and turning it into a book. But what I liked about it was that it was a whole book, and the Self-Publisher's Companion is exactly this. If you look at it, it's an entire book on a subject delivered in about 1,000-word chunks. In other words, there are many short chapters in the book. And it makes it kind of ideal for that situation like mobile reading that you were talking about, like you're going somewhere, or, you know, I go and sit and write at the coffee shop. And one thing I noticed was people come into the coffee shop, there's usually a little line you have to wait on. Each person coming into the shop, they get in line. That's number one. Number two, out comes the smartphone and they start doing something. And some of the people are reading while they're in line because they've got 2 minutes. And they're in the middle of reading something and they want to pick up and have something they can read in that little downtime, that little tiny piece of downtime, and then get ready for their coffee order. And so I think that's exactly what you were talking about. You know, that if you have something that's chunkable and broke, that you can break down into pieces, that will suit the mobile reader ideally.
So really we've got this, there's a new skill then of e-writing to go with e-reading.
I think so. I think it's really great that you're reminding authors of that, because if the authors and the people who put the books together collaborate that way, then we can create content that's much more reader friendly. And that's a good thing.
Well, you know, in this sort of do-it-yourself world, let me just seed you with a little idea for a product which I, as an author, would love to purchase from you, right? So here's the thing, right, is that I would love to have some Joel templates that I could purchase, yeah? To say, that's a good one, that works well for this type of stuff, this works well for fiction, this works well for prose, this works well for poetry, this works well for non-fiction, this works well for a manual. And if there was a package of, I don't know, $99 with 4 or 5 templates of good design that I can import into Pages or into Word, then I'd be straight on your website tomorrow downloading it.
You know, it's very interesting you mentioned that, Tom, because, and I want the audience listening to this to know that this is, you know, we have never talked about this before, but I am working on that product right now.
Is that right? Fantastic.
Absolutely. I've been working on it for several months. I have the first template. You know, a lot of my development is based on InDesign. So my concept for this product is to start the templates in InDesign, create the line of templates, and then translate them into Word. And we are about 25% through with that process. And I expect to be launching that later this year.
Oh, that's fantastic. And we haven't had this conversation, have we?
No, this is just some other way that you know these things, Tom, but I've gotten used to that with you.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, actually, I'm now going to sign up to be one of your beta testers in that case.
Okay, I'll put you on the list. You'll be number two.
We'll beta test it, and also we'll get some good showcase material out there that shows
absolutely.
The difference of, And what I can do is, like, here's one that Tom would have done, and here's one that Tom did with Joel's template. Look at the difference.
Well, I'm very excited about that because, you know, so many people are getting into publishing their own books and they're confronting this situation of having to do everything themselves. They don't want to spend thousands of dollars hiring cover designers, interior designers, but they still want their book to look good. And, you know, why shouldn't it look good? And I think if I can put the tools in their hands that will allow them, you know, to be confident that they're going to have a book that's properly constructed, all the pieces are in the right place, things that are on the page the right place, and they don't have to worry about that. I think that's just a fantastic idea, and that's why I've been working on it for months, actually.
So listen, you start your book by saying why self-publishing is entering a golden age.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Yeah, because we use things like golden age to refer to times gone past, don't we? But now we're actually entering a golden age, and isn't that a great time to be on the planet?
Well, I love it. I mean, as someone who started self-publishing in the 1980s, you know, it seems like a long time coming. And, you know, back then, mostly self-publishing was something we did in secret because it was so denigrated as a way to publish a book that you couldn't be branded as a self-publisher and survive. So we had many subterfuges we would set up. You know, we would get a post office box in the town next door, so it didn't look like the author and the press were in the same location. You know, we'd make up all these names for people, even though there was only one person behind the keyboard. And we had many ways to kind of try to fool the book industry into thinking that, you know, this was a larger publisher. Now, the indie spirit is everywhere. And the idea of people doing it themselves, putting their own voice out into the world, is one that's highly respected now. And why not? There are people doing it, making good money, and having an influence. And I think it definitely is a golden age when you've got the ability of somebody sitting at a keyboard to create a manuscript, upload it to a printer, get print-on-demand books, upload it to an ebook retailer, and start distributing their books all over the world right from their keyboard with no intervention. I mean, that to me is kind of the ultimate fulfillment of the self-publishing idea.
Yeah, so we've got a few things going on here, and we've got the fact that one is more and more people are reading things e, so there's less trees getting cut down, there's less fossil fuels being needed to ship books from one side of the planet to the other. But also there's the speed, isn't there? So I've done several Kindle books over the last year, and I've uploaded them, and like within 24 hours they're available for global download, which is just phenomenal. But at the same time, it's actually this week is the week of the London Book Fair, where you think that people will be discussing all of these wonderful things. And this person will be nameless. So he's the MD of a fairly large publishing company in the UK, and he's on the bookseller.com was quoting here as he's dismissing self-publishing as being irrelevant, and he's saying if you self-publish, you may as well not bother. You may as well be silent. So, where is this coming from?
Well, I think that speaks volumes about what we were talking about earlier, Tom. I mean, the fact that the publishers, including this person, are sadly out of touch with their own readers. That is, the people who are buying his books have, I believe, opinions that are quite opposite to his. And, you know, the number of people self-publishing now, the influence of the books that people are self-publishing, the money that people are making self-publishing, all argue against that kind of 18th century idea. And part of it, I believe, is strictly kind of a parochial paternalism, in a sense, where the publisher knows best. They are the gatekeepers. They decide what will be published and what will not be published. They decide how it will be published, to whom it will be published, what it will look like, what it will cost, and where you will buy it. And that, you know, the age of that kind of paternalism is fading fast. And people just don't have patience for that approach anymore, to be treated kind of as with a certain amount of, like they're dependents. And they can only do what the publisher tells them to do. They can only read what the publisher tells them to read. So, unfortunately, I think that particular individual is on the wrong side of history. And I think that's demonstrable right now.
Do you think the U.S. is leading the U.K. and Europe in this?
I think the U.S. is really well out ahead, partly because of the technology is just more readily available here. For instance, I know a lot of people in Australia have been waiting for print-on-demand to arrive there, and we've had it for many years here, and it's enabled thousands of people to get into print, and yet there hasn't been any print-on-demand in Australia, for instance. I don't know about the UK, but I know that from people I've talked to, there's just a lot less social media activity in the UK, and but I think that the world is moving faster, and we're more and more connected all the time, and that is going to have a pretty big influence going forward.
So with your book, with the Self-Publishing Companion, how are you? Because I always say to people, they think when they've written a book, then that's the hard work, and I always say, well, when you've written it, you're about 25% of the way there, and when you got it published, you're about 50% of the way there, and then you've still got the 50% of then getting it out there and getting people to read it and absorb it and tell their mates to read it and this sort of stuff. So how are you going about sort of spreading the word on your book? Because you're obviously a book designer, but you're also an author now.
Also an author and now a book marketer.
Well,
I always tell that to my clients when they start to stress out about, the pages or the errors or the illustrations. And I say, look, this is the fun part. You should be enjoying this. We're just having fun making books here. Once you get the book, that's when you're in trouble. I'll tell you something I've learned, Tom, from this experience of publishing this book, and it's only been out a few weeks, is that the advice that we've been given, that people, authors, should start building their author platform years in advance of publishing, is really good advice. And I get asked this question all the time, and I hear authors say, well, when the book is out, then I'm going to start a blog. And I constantly tell them, I say, that is exactly, that's a great idea, but I think you should start your blog today.
Well,
because there's no doubt in my mind that when the book comes out, you're going to look back and say, gee, I should have done this a lot sooner. So my experience has been, I started my blog about a year and a half ago, and I worked at it pretty hard, and I built up a very nice readership. And when it came time to publish the book, I had a very large network of people who are essentially helping me market the book, and I include you. I'm doing this interview with you because we met and connected months ago, and I did a lovely interview with Joanna Penn. And I've had many bloggers invite me to submit guest articles to them to help promote the book, which is a fantastic way of promoting a book because you get access to other networks. And all of these resources have come to me from being a blogger. And you just can't build up that audience in a month or two. It just doesn't work. Like the first 6 months I was blogging, not much happened. Today, I probably got about 1,000 readers a day on my blog. And that is just a huge advantage in trying to put a product out. I can, publicize it to those people, and hopefully those people will tell their friends. Because I think it's a great book for people who are thinking about getting into self-publishing and looking for some way to find out what it's all about, what kind of activities they'll be involved in, who is it that makes a good self-publisher. Do you really have the mindset that would allow you to become successful at self-publishing? I go into all of these things in the book to try and help people get oriented to the whole world of self-publishing and find their way through the difficulties.
And I've got to tell everybody, if there's two websites you're interested in getting in touch with, finding out about how to publish a book, there's two websites I highly recommend. And one is your site, the bookdesigner.com, and the other is Joanna Penn's site, thecreativepen.com. and they're just packed full of really amazing information. I know that Joanna kind of did the same thing. She just launched her own book, Pentecost, recently. That was a fab read, really, really enjoyable read. And I know that she's it's got sequels written all over it. It's got film rights written all over it. And she's done a great job getting it out there on the back of having run the blog for a good year and a half beforehand and getting a good readership.
Exactly. Yeah. And she had a tremendous amount of involvement from her blog readers in developing the book. In fact, you know, the whole story of the cover of the book, of course, I acted as Joanna's designer. So I got to actually design her book. And I thought, when I read the book, I just thought, movie. This is obviously, it was almost like a storyboard for a script. I mean, it was amazing. The scenes, the action, the whole drama. It's going to make a great movie, I think. And so she got her readers from her blog, hundreds of people, helping her decide on what cover and keeping them informed about the progress of the manuscript. And, you know, the cover that ended up on the book was not the one that I picked. And I'm not sure it was the one Joanna picked. It was the one her readers said was the best.
That's phenomenal, isn't it? Yeah.
That's incredible, yeah. So she knows she's giving them what they want because she asked them.
Yeah, and that's going to form the sequel, isn't it, as well? Because the sequel is going to get better and better.
Yeah, you know? Prophecy.
Move Over, Dan Brown. Actually, I even blogged my blog, and it was Move Over, Dan Brown, I think, was the title of my blog when I wrote about it.
I think her book was as good as Dan Brown, maybe better in some ways. Also, her background in the history of religion really came through there. And, you know, she just has such a deep knowledge of that whole field that she was able to write from a place of total credibility about what she was writing about. And that really makes a difference to me as a reader when I was reading the book.
So listen, if we've got someone listening just now who who's just, you know, they said there's a book inside everybody, and somebody's just got that nuance of an idea that they'd like to write a book, what's your top tip for somebody just starting out, just with that idea?
My top tip is to start writing today. And to not worry about what you're writing, to just, you know, particularly for people who have trouble getting started, or they keep thinking about an idea, but they haven't actually put anything down on paper. You know, nothing will change that situation as quickly or as dramatically as taking regular action on your idea. So if you could set aside even 15 minutes a day to just sit quietly in someplace quiet. You may have to go out of your home. Look, I've spent a lot of time, Tom, writing in my car because I couldn't find any place else that was quiet and isolated. But, you know, 15 or 20 minutes sitting writing in your car can be incredibly productive to start exploring what you have inside you. Everybody has incredible stories to tell because everyone's lived a life. And whether you want to write fiction, nonfiction, it doesn't matter. My suggestion is to just start writing and keep the pen moving. Don't worry about whether it's any good or not. You're not committing an act of literature. You're doing an exploration.
Oh, that's the normal. Don't worry about design. Don't worry about the front cover. Don't worry about the publisher. Don't worry about self-publishing all. Just get out there and use that neurology to express your feelings in words.
Absolutely. Keep the pen moving. Now, I have for years practiced free writing, which is a specific discipline where we use a timer and we write by hand and we have a prompt that we write to. And the main instruction in free writing is to write faster than you can think and don't stop. And it's just phenomenal what you will discover inside yourself if you do this and do it regularly.
Well, that's pretty much how I write every morning. I meditate before I write every morning, and I'm always amazed at the stuff that comes out. And it's mostly lucid and mostly understandable. But I definitely have the feeling that the keyboard is being driven, and I'm merely the spectator as the words fly through. And do you get that also in design when you're doing design, cover design and interior design?
Well, cover design particularly, it helps if you can force yourself to think in new categories. you know, the tendency in cover design is to do exactly what everyone else has done in that genre. And if you look at genre displays of books, I do this on my blog once in a while, like all of the historical romances have almost the identical cover. They have the single woman wearing a period costume alone in a landscape somewhere. Whatever else is there, that is what the cover is. And it's so restrictive. I mean, I know that people have expectations about books, but if you sit down to design a cover, you have to be able to acknowledge that and then just put it aside and say, well, maybe I'm going to do a historical romance and it's going to look like a workbook, or it's going to look like a nonfiction book of some kind, and just mess around, just have fun, you know, be completely unencumbered by ideas of what it should look like, and just let your fancy take you where it will. Now, using that kind of approach, you will end up discarding 8 or 9 out of 10 of the ideas that you come up with. But that's okay, because you are making yourself available for that one breakthrough idea that brings all of the elements together and just really presents them beautifully to the potential reader that you wouldn't have hit on if you just stayed in the little box for your genre.
Gotcha. And can I ask you a bit of a nerdy question then? With now people reading books on a Kindle, which is a black and white display, and we've got the print book in whatever format it is, either a matte or a gloss cover, and you've got the iPad, which is full color. As a designer, have you got to think about these different platforms now and get things that work in on these different displays?
Well, for the covers, you most definitely have to deal with that. And the biggest change that's happened there for both print books and ebooks is the fact that people have moved to buying books online. So if you go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble or any online book retailer and type in the book you're looking for or the subject matter, you're going to be presented with a whole screen full of little itsy-bitsy tiny images of the cover. And if you do that right now, you will find that at least half of those images are unreadable. Because the publishers have, and this is another example of the disconnect of the publishers, they haven't taken the time or been interested enough to actually look at what's happening there. So they'll take a print book cover, which might be an absolutely gorgeous cover if you found it sitting on the table at your bookshop, and they've just said, well, just shrink it down and stick it on the web. And of course, that doesn't work. And many of these are just basically illegible. You can't even read the title sometimes. So from the point of view of the designer, you have to take that into account. As a bigger and bigger percentage of people buy books online, you have to start creating images that work online in those book search engines, whether it's Google Books or Amazon or anybody else. So that's really what's important about the covers. And for instance, when I went to do a Self-Publisher's Companion, I did a cover that works well in print. I put the print book up with that cover, but when I did the Kindle version, I tore that cover apart and put it back together in a way that made the title much more obvious and large as a percentage of the space. So it's really very readable. It's not a tall rectangle anymore in the Kindle store. It's a square. It just seems to represent the ebook much better to me. So, you know, even if the publishers just said, or if you're self-publishing yourself, you know, don't be tied to the book cover. You've got the book cover for the print book. Now go back and like rethink that, you know, using the same branding you put on the book, but reconfigure it. Make a whole new cover for your ebook display. And I think you'll be much happier. And when those search results fill up your page, your book's going to pop out compared to the books that weren't designed for that display.
For sure, yeah. And then the same for that text, which is normally on the back, sometimes just ends up as being the descriptive text in the product description in the Amazon display as well, and that might need a bit of rethinking too.
Yeah, back cover copy is like a whole study. I mean, you know, there are people in the trade who specialize in just writing back covers, and they charge quite a bit of money. for that service, because the back cover copy, which in a sense is a continuation of the way the author originally pitched the book, is pretty crucial sales copy. So if you think all the way back to an author pitching an agent a book, and maybe in 1 minute describing that book, like if you could describe your book in 1 minute and make people really want to buy it, see, then the agent is going to turn around and use that pitch to sell it to the editor. And the editor is going to turn around and say, you know, we need to put this pitch on the back cover of your book, because that's where we pull together the big sales copy. It's going to end up in the press release for the book. So this, you know, this pitch idea is really pretty critical. So when you get down to it, you have to, and I would work on this very hard. Like I did the maybe 30 drafts of the copy, which was one paragraph for the back cover of my book, because it was just crucial to get that 1 minute pitch correct and to let people know why they need the book, what's in it, and what it'll do for them.
So listen, I'm going to put you on the spot now, Joel.
Go for it.
Can you give us that elevator pitch?
Yes. Are you kidding me? No matter what kind of book you want to publish, Self-Publisher's Companion, you'll find advice, inspiration, and down-to-earth tips from an expert designer who has spent years helping self-publishers launch their own life-changing books. Plus, real-life advice on how to use social media, sound book construction, and insight into the critical tasks that confront the modern self-publisher. It's like having a mentor by your side.
Now, who wouldn't want to buy that book? I think publishers need to buy that book, never mind self-publishers.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'll send a few books.
Absolutely. Well, Joel, listen, it's been a real, real pleasure talking to you today. I think we could go on and on and on. And this book show is now a regular weekly feature. So if you've got people that you want to point our way and put on the Barefoot book show, let them know that we're transmitting weekly 7 to 8 Wednesdays GMT. And actually, when you've got these book design templates out and any other project you're working on, you want to come back and talk about any aspect of book design, will you come back and talk to us?
I would love to do that, Tom, and thank you for that. It's very generous. Absolutely.
It's been a real pleasure to have you on today, and I recommend everybody visits your website, thebookdesigner.com, and gets hold of a copy of the book. If you're serious about getting it in print, then as far as I'm concerned, it's the Bible.
Thanks, Tom.
So, a real pleasure to talk to you, Joel. And speak again soon. Take care.
Will do.